Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Glad to be here, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. And I want to welcome WNYmedia.net. WNYmedia.net out of Buffalo, New York, who is carrying the Cup of Joe show for the very first time. And I want to welcome them to my list of growing subscribers. I don't know exactly when they're going to air the show. But you can tune in and listen in from their website, wnymedia.net. And for those of you who have been reading the blog, you know that I have been a little busy lately because my wife went to the hospital. I will not give you the details of her surgery because I don't want to gross anybody out. It wasn't like a life-threatening emergency type of deal, but it was something that she needed to get done because it was making her life miserable and because it was causing her a lot of pain, basically. And after a long wait, we've been waiting basically a year and a half, 2 years to get this done. Grady Hospital, whom I love, their only fault is that they're slow as all get out, but I can understand exactly why. At any rate, as I speak right now, she is in the hospital, and she will hopefully return home tomorrow. So that's all well and good. She did very well in the operation, the doctor said, and she should be able to come home tomorrow, and I will be glad to have her. Now, because she's in the hospital, what I basically did was that I recorded some extra stuff with Rick, and I had recorded something with my friend Dave, who used to work with me over at Siemens Tucker. And in a few minutes, we're gonna take a little break, and we're going to play the remainder of what Rick and I were talking about last show, and we're going to play the interview with Dave, and that'll be the show for this week. And again, I want to point out that show number 100 is coming up, and I do want your suggestions, and I also want your suggestions for stupid boss tricks. And we know that bosses do really, really stupid things sometimes, and we're going to have some stories about that. In fact, Dave and I are going to have an entire segment based upon that. So we're going to do that, and please email me for it, and let me know if you've got any stupid boss tricks. Don't call it that, Joe. You don't want to get your ass sued. But we want your stupid boss tricks. Let us know all the stupid things that go on in your workplace. It doesn't necessarily have to be your boss in particular. Just stupid things that go on in the workplace. Because, you know, the right-wingers are always talking about how stupid and inefficient government is. Well, you know what? Business is the same way. They're both run by human beings, and they're both just as screwed up. Private industry is not sacrosanct. They're no better and no worse than government. So send me your stupid boss tricks, and I will air them when I get them. And I actually have been getting a few of them, and I just haven't had time to process them yet. And also, again, we wanted to comment on your on the 100th show, which is just coming up. This is show number 94 as I'm recording this, at any rate. And we've got six more shows until number 100, and I want to do something special. No, I'm not doing a clip show. I do not have the time to go through all of the shows and pick out what's best and what's not. Hey, if I had a staff, if I had bunches of people working for me, it would be cool, and we could have somebody who would be in charge of something like that. But I don't, and until I don't, you're going to have to be satisfied with what I put out for the 100th show, because quite frankly, I don't have the money to pay somebody to do it, and I don't have the time. I've got looking for work and other things to do. And of course, for the next week or so, I will be trying to take care of my sick wife. And by the way, thank God for Grady Hospital. If it was not for Grady Hospital, it's quite possible that my wife would have been dead by now, because it's a long story, and I only have a few seconds to talk about it before we have to go into the break. But basically, she had an injury which made her go there, and because of that injury, she wound up becoming aware of the different medical problems that she had that she needed to get taken care of. Anyway, let's take a little break, and we'll be right back with Rick, and then later on, my friend Dave from Siemens. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Cover Joe Radio Show.
And we're back on the Cover Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is, everybody, all together now, CUPOJOE.blogspot.com. And the email address is JOEVEC@bellsouth.net. Okay, I want to welcome everybody who's listening on rantradio.com. Actually, they may or may not be listening to this part of it. We're doing a longer show this time around, and because we've been talking so much about stuff, I decided to screw it and not worry about time constraints. I will edit this out for Rant Radio, so that's still 55 minutes long, as they like it. But if you're listening from there, you may not be hearing this. So,
well, if you want to listen to the full rant and ramble, where do you go, Joe?
That's right. Well, I don't know. We'll see. I've got some other couple of people coming over, and hopefully we can have even longer shows, or at least I can have some stuff for future shows anyway, because we got my friend Dave, who's getting he's facing unemployment from the Siemens, and another guy who calls himself a libertarian / Republican, and I wanted to talk about those issues. But let's continue on with what we were talking about last segment about fascism. And I'm saying straight out that we're currently living in a fascist nation. And I think I have reasons to back that up. First of all,
No, actually, you've got to first define fascism, because I don't think people use that word quite liberally.
Yeah.
And say, oh, fascist.
People use that as a definition of somebody who's overbearingly or has overbearing
dominant
authority,
which is kind of true.
And you know, if you look at the soup Nazi. You know, because of the way, if you ever saw that episode of Seinfeld, the soup Nazi who ran his shop a certain way. That's a big authority figure. And people generally define fascism with, like we mentioned in the last segment, Nazism. Nazism was one of many fascist governments. But let's be clear about the origins of fascism and what it is, so people have better understanding of what's going on. Fascism is an Italian word. A lot of people are not aware of this. It sounds like a German word, but it's an Italian word. And it actually dates back to Roman times. A fascian, F-A-S-C, is basically a bundle of rods that was given to a local ruler as a symbol of their authority. When Mussolini took over Italy in the 20s, he called his movement fascism, but he also called it corporatism, and I'll talk about that in a second. I'll talk about that right now. He said it really should be called corporatism, because basically what it is a merging of corporate and governmental power. That's different from liberalism, which is what also should be known as democratic capitalism, because the government kind of sort of works with businesses in terms of regulating them and working with them to make sure that there's competition and no monopolies and no unfairness to workers, setting a decent minimum standard so people can live a decent life if they work for a living. Not everybody is going to be a go-getter. Not everybody's going to want to, you know, be a big TV star or have ambitions to be CEO. Some people are not good, are not cut out for that, and some people don't want to be cut out for that. I'm not cut out for that, and I never will be.
But bottom line, Joe, fascism is when government and corporate the corporate world almost become indistinguishable.
Right, exactly.
In their desires, in their aims and objectives.
That's right.
And in what they output. So the military-industrial complex was at one stage, as first described by Eisenhower, was the seeds of fascism in this country.
Right.
And we've come a long way, baby, since then.
Well, we have and we haven't, because the fact of the matter is that we have had fascists in this country since the 20s, and they a lot of our businesses, including Henry Ford from the Ford Motor Company, they were big supporters of the Nazis before we went to war with them. And of course, George W. Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, he was indicted twice for trading with the Nazis during the war. So these people, you know, they have the fascist element, the corporatist element has been in this country. In fact, there was an attempted coup. Well, almost an attempted coup on Franklin Roosevelt. Not a lot of people know this. There was a group of corporate leaders who tried to either remove Roosevelt from power by force or force him into a position where he would be just like a showpiece, and the real work would be done on the side.
Like Bush?
Well, yeah, but they basically were threatening to take over by force if he wouldn't agree. The problem with them was they picked the wrong general to lead their coup, General Smedley Butler, a Marine Corps guy who had done some stuff in Panama. He wrote a really, really great thing called War is a Racket, which I highly recommend. Do a Google search for it. You'll find it online. And where he talked about that. And basically, he spilled the beans on these guys. Unfortunately, they were never...
talking about Teddy Roosevelt, then.
No. This
guy was still around?
I'm sorry?
Smedley?
Smedley was still around. Well, he was
I think that's actually the name of your secret.
No, General
email.
Smedley Butler.
I think that's the name of your the real name of the secret email guy.
No,
Bob. His name was Smedley.
Smedley. No. General Smedley Butler. Read that. Smedley Butler. Real general, Marines general, 4 stars. He talked about how war is a racket, and he knew because his job was to help keep countries stable for our corporate interests in different places. And he was a big general in World War I.
He invented the Banana Republic.
I don't know if he invented the
Banana Republic. Well, I mean, you know, pretty much that's what it comes down to is he was keeping the Central and South America safe for Chiquita Bananas.
Yeah.
And Del Monte in the Philippines and so on and so forth.
Right, all those places. And he backed that all up. At any rate, these people, after the New Deal took over, they kind of went away, but they stayed under the surface because they still had a lot of money and they still had a lot of ambition. They just couldn't do anything because the American public overwhelmingly supported Franklin Delano Roosevelt and the New Deal. People don't talk about this. Everybody talks about creeping socialism with Franklin Roosevelt, but they don't understand what he was accomplishing and what was going on historically. And most people supported it because their lives were made better by it. And capitalism didn't do so badly under New Deal policies. Of course not. It thrived because it allowed people to earn enough money to be able to buy stuff. Now you look at what's going on with people now since since all the wealth has been sucked out of the middle class, people are struggling to get by. And it's more of a harder scramble. I mean, this is why you see all these crappy advertisements on stuff for TV. People just desperate to get money. This is why guys like Bob get pushed all the time to increase.
Smedley.
Sorry, I had to take a drink there. But
no, we're all you know, when poor Smedley was out there working 80, 90 hours a week, man, that's twice in the, you know, how many hours is that a day?
God,
that's 16 hours a day for a bloody trucking firm.
And actually, he works like 6-7 days a week. So,
maybe it's 14 hours a day, but it's like, that's absurd.
It is absurd.
That's absurd.
That's what most people are coming to. And then you have the opposite, people like me who are unemployed or underemployed, and there's no even, you know, and I go to a place like we go to a little store like, I don't know, a place called Maxway, which is not where we live, and there's never enough people, man, in the registers because they're only on a bare minimum, or the dollar store. There's only a bare minimum of employees there. Then we go to one place, honey, that there was nobody at the register. We could have just walked out with some shit.
Hey, this you think you it's no different in it's no different in Lord and Taylor.
Yeah. So
my wife worked in Lord and Taylor, and they're never, you know, they hire just enough to get the job done.
Yeah, and
they
overwork the people that are there.
And they overwork them.
And my brother quit his job because they were working him 60, 70 hours a week, and even though he was making good money, you know, he didn't have a life, and he's like, "I'm sick of this. I can't handle this anymore. This is not what I wanted when I went to work." But the point is overall that this is a corporate state. And that's what fascism is basically a corporate state, a government of, by, and for corporations. My wife wants to say something. Go ahead. There you go. Hand her the mic.
I just wanted to mention that one job that I had, it was at first part-time. I worked like 4 hours a day. And then after a while, you know, when I got really good at the job and got so fast, I started my job was wrapping silverware into a napkin. And then I started helping out the dishwasher. And when the boss noticed that, instead of hiring two dishwashers, now he only hired one. And my job became not only rolling the silverware, but now helping out the dishwasher.
And they pay you any more money for
and
that?
And everything. You know, no. Mm-hmm. Then, when I mentioned I needed more hours, and more, so they were tacking on more jobs. And it finally got to the point where that I was coming in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't leaving until 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. 14-hour
you know?
Days.
And
you were in high school back then?
I started working full time after I graduated from high school. And because I worked so hard, I ended up becoming very sick. I came down with mononucleosis and then of course couldn't work at all.
Right.
Because I was totally bedridden, just exhausted.
But the overall point that we're trying to make is that this is a corporate state that is run by and for large corporations who are less interested even in their bottom line sometimes than they are in maintaining their control. And one of the aspects of fascism is labor power is suppressed. Another aspect is the militarism that goes on. If you look at this country, God forbid anybody mentions that you should spend a penny less on defense, even though the defense budget has gone through the roof, even though we spend more than every other nation in the world combined on defense, when we don't even really have a serious enemy like the Soviet Union to counter anymore, anybody who mentions one penny, taking one penny away from the defense budget is automatically, oh my God, you know, you want the Arabs to come in and take over. The Arabs are not going to come in and take us over, people. Good Lord. It's just the nationalism. You know, whenever I hear people chanting USA, USA, I keep thinking Sieg Heil, Sieg Heil, because that's the way I see it, this kind of mindless mob crowd thing. And it really, really kind of sickens me because it kind of goes against, to me, what my idea of America is all about. Not this kind of mindless do what we say or you're dead. If you look at how the media is treated, that's yet another. We were talking about that when we talked about that in the last segment.
I had an argument with my poor mother this week. And I say poor because she's like, you know, misguided, I think. She says, basically to me, Joe, she says, you know, I start ranting about Bush, and I rant about this, and I rant about that. And she says, you're so negative. You're so negative. And I say, what happened when Clinton was in office, and you were ranting and raving against him? That was patriotic. But for me to do that isn't being negative, and I'm thinking poorly about your country.
And you know something? We have reason to be against the Bush people. This is not a personal thing against George W. Bush.
Oh, yes, it is.
No, it's not. It's not.
Hate this son of a bitch.
Don't say that, man. They'll come for you. But the thing about it is, I would be perfectly happy to let this son of a bitch stay in Texas, lead a healthy, happy life, and not bother me. You know? What was it in Fiddler on the Roof? Where the guy asked the rabbi the question, is there a proper blessing for the czar? And the rabbi said, of course, may God bless and keep the czar far away from us. And that's basically how I feel about George W. Bush. May God bless and keep him out of power and away from me. The reasons that I don't like what's going on is fucking Iraq. this whole Shaivo shit, all of the pandering to the religious right, I have actual reasons, and we on the left have actual reasons for disliking George W. Bush. Did the right have any real reasons for hating Clinton? No, they didn't. They hated him from the get-go. They never gave him any kind of a chance. Even if we had gone into Iraq against our wishes, if they had gone in and done the right thing, built up the infrastructure, not tortured people, treated them right, and built them up into, if not a democratic society, at least a stable society where the Iraqis get the freedom that they want, I would have been all for it. I said, hey, you know, he did it the wrong way, but you know what? The end results were good. Because that's how they're trying to spin it. You know, they're all talking about how wonderful, they're talking about how wonderful Fallujah is. You know, that city that we bombed to the ground.
Fallujah.
How, yeah,
Fallujah.
You know why it's so safe? There's nobody there anymore. It was a city of 300,000 people. Now there's maybe a couple of thousand live there.
And now they're nomads.
And it's like, that's, you know, it's unreal. So it's like saying, you know, well, we're happier now because it's quiet, but the reason it's quiet is because you killed everybody. You know, that's outrageous. And that's all part of being part of a fascist regime. And we have a fascist, and I call it a regime because it's not a legitimate government. There hasn't been a full investigation as to what happened in 2000. There hasn't been a full investigation as to what happened in 2004. As far as I'm concerned, this is still an illegitimate government. You know, people bitched about Clinton all the time, but there was nothing illegitimate about him. He was voted in by pretty big margins. There wasn't a close election. There wasn't any controversies about him. But we've had George W. Bush with two very, very controversial elections, and nobody seems to give a shit about that. And that's one of the aspects of a fascist government. Of the 14 that that one professor listed, of the 14, one of them is fraudulent elections. And so, but anyway.
But have the Democrats capitulated?
Yes, they have.
I have to say, I mean, so have
they. So did the Weimar Republic.
They are, in fact, fascists as well.
Well, they're not fascists.
In a way, they're just
but,
not.
No,
they're just not the ruling fascists.
They're just not capable of handling this type of opposition because they don't either. They don't understand what they're up against. They refuse to believe what they're up against, or they still believe too much in the institutions of our government to make. And you know something? If it wasn't for separation of powers, they'd be a lot stronger than they are now. I mean, the what's going on in the Schiavo case is proving that they're not all powerful, but. Make no bones about it. We are currently a fascist regime. This country is going to go down because of it. I hope it doesn't go down militarily, but it's going to go down eventually simply because stuff like this cannot last and never does last. You know, the Reich was supposed to last, what, 1,000 years? What did it last, about 20? No, it's not going to last. It will not continue. And I hate to say it because I'm an American patriot. I love my country. I love the freedoms that we have. But you know what? We've gone nuts, and it's time for someone to lay the big smack down on us. And it's long overdue, in my opinion. At any rate, I want to put an end to this because we've been talking for a long, long time, and frankly, I need a break. So we're going to take a few, and we'll be back with my friend Dave from when I used to work at Siemens. Sam, play us out.
The Copper Joe Radio Show will be right back.
We're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I encourage you to email me or to write a comment on the blog in either the open thread section or on any of my posts whenever I have the time to post them. And, of course, our 100th show is coming up. So if you have any suggestions that you want to see me do on the show, anything you'd like to see, just email me. Again, joevec@bellsouth.net. Okay, we're here with my buddy Dave. Dave, how you doing?
Doing great, Joe.
Dave and I used to work together over at Siemens, and he was my partner when I started there regular. When I was with the temp, because when I was there as a temp, I was working on day shift on the welding area, and when I came on as a regular employee of Siemens, I worked on what they call the finishing line, the paint line. And Dave was my companion. We were there with Chris.
Right.
Chris was there. Chris was a football player who used to play for Barcelona.
Right.
Of the World Football League, and he was looking to get a gig. But that didn't turn out, did it?
I don't know what happened to him. As a coach. He just dropped out of sight.
Yeah, well, he was looking to get a job as a coach with them for the Barcelona Dragons. Was it for the Berlin team? I think it was for the Berlin team.
Frankfurt. Right.
Frankfurt, and he was trying to get a job with them as an assistant coach, and we just never heard anything about that. He kind of dropped out of sight. But we were there on the paint line, and we share.
Or, as I would say, the pain line.
The pain line. For those of you who don't remember my early shows or are fairly new listeners, let me explain how this works. I work Siemens Tuckers is they build electric circuit boxes from steel. Well, imagine a big roll of toilet paper. Imagine that instead of made of tissue paper, that it's made of steel, and it weighs somewhere in the area of 5 tons. About 9,000 pounds each of these things weighs. And they take that, and they pound it, and they press it, and they make it into boxes.
Right.
Once the shape is done by the big stamping machines, by the big press machines, it goes to get painted. Everything is painted the same kind of battleship gray type of paint. And how they do that is they have an overhanging conveyor belt that's got hooks on it, and they put stuff is put on hooks on one end where it goes up and around into the vat, and gets somehow electrically fused, into the paint gets electrically fused. And then it was Dave and my and Chris Jobs to take it off the line, take them off of the hooks, and put them onto pallets to be stored later or to be used for projects that they needed to do. And then later on, I moved over to the assembly area where the guts were literally put into the empty boxes, one screw at a time or one part at a time, depending on the line and depending on how it goes, blah, blah, blah. Very straightforward manufacturing job that used to be fairly common in the United States. Now is much less so because these jobs, and this plant is moving to Mexico. Now, I thought they were moving March of this year, but they're moving March of next year, aren't they? They're completely closing down the plant, which I'm sure must have a whole bunch of people in an uproar, because some of those guys have been working there for a long time. And when I was there, they had people who had been working there 40, 45 years. And so they got retired and they got to get out. But there are people who are working there maybe 7 or 8 years who really haven't had to look for a job in a long time. And they're probably a little worried, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, Joe. Yeah, just like I told you when you were there. I mean, it's just a lack of respect for the older heads, the people who's been there for a while, you know, putting it down each and every day.
Just watch your volume there.
Right. And it's just, it mystifies me that, you know, the people who they're doing the job the best way they can, to come in on time, you know, do their job, not shucking the jive and not playing around, you know, they usually the one end up getting the shaft.
Sure.
And, you know, it just amazes me that the other people, or the group of people that does nothing but play all day, they get buddy-buddy with the supervisors.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they get all the perks and all the advancements.
And that's where I wanted to talk about mostly, because the problems that I saw at Siemens had very little to do with the people working there and almost everything to do with management, specifically the middle management, our supervisors, the floor managers. Because it seemed to me, and you agreed with me, that they were there more to intimidate us than to establish any kind of efficiency.
Exactly.
And our boss was a guy named Al Kelly, who seemed on the surface like a nice enough guy, but let's face it, he's incompetent. He didn't know what he was doing. And his idea of management was to get to the people who were hanging the stuff on the paint line, point at them and say, you know, use every hook. Don't miss. Now, let me explain that, you know, obviously they go by production. And they go by the number of parts that come out, although that just by a strict number, that can be misleading, because different parts, you can get more out. Because some parts are larger than others and require to use more hooks.
Right.
Okay. Now, there are, we'll say one hanger has two hooks, and on the line. If you're standing on the end of the line, it takes every 8 hour shift, approximately 5,500 hangers pass by every night. One every, I think I counted one every 5 seconds.
Yeah, I remember you counted them.
Well, you know, that's how I am. No one else ever did that.
Mr. Meticulous.
No one else ever did that, did they?
Oh no.
See, and
you're
I
the
think,
only one.
Did I or did I not think like a supervisor while
oh,
I
yeah.
was there?
Oh yeah.
Now, because I was always trying to figure what's the most we can possibly get and what's a reasonable goal that
right.
we can strive for. Now, again, they went by sheer numbers. Now, the thing about it is every hangar, like I said, has two hooks. So, theoretically, the most parts you can get on an 8-hour shift is about 11,000, give
right.
or take. Now, if you're doing some parts, like we had some really, really big boxes that couldn't be hung straight up. They had to be hung sideways because they were too long.
Right.
And those took up four or five hangars.
Right.
And if you're hanging a bunch of those up, you're not going to get as many numbers as you are hanging, say, like a small lid or a small part that you can hang two to every hook.
Exactly.
Because we had some little parts that were like that. And I was meticulous even with those, too, wasn't I?
Oh,
I mean, they had to be stacked a certain way. And anybody who messed with my stuff, I'm like, man, you know, let me do it. I know how to do it right. And then somebody does it when I'm on break, and I'm like, man, you messed up my whole setup. I've been working on this.
Especially first shift.
Yeah. Oh, I got on their case about
that. I remember.
And this ran 24 hours, the plant. So, but at any rate, they focused on that. I think the goal was 10,000. A night,
exactly,
which is what they wanted. But you can't always do 10,000 every night if you're doing these big boxes.
Right.
And Kelly wasn't even very smart about how stuff is being hung. I mean, you can still do I'm sure you can do 10,000 parts a night and still have just when you're changing parts over, having enough of a space so that the guys get to catch their breath a little bit, because it's a constant job. Unlike, but. And he just seemed to like to intimidate people, and you saw it when you had new people come in. And how did he treat the new people?
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, it's like a Hitler all over again. I mean, not to be so harsh, but, I mean.
He's the line Nazi.
Right.
He's the line Nazi.
I'm like, it's just like I used to tell Joe about this African brother whose name was Joe as well. We used to tell him all the time, hey, guys. Hey, y'all take it easy. You know, I mean, the part's not going anywhere. And, you know, you just let yourself be intimidated by Kelly. This one story in particular, Kelly used a psychological ploy on him.
Yeah, I remember that.
He talking about, you guys not doing the job. You only hung 3,000 parts.
Which was horseshit.
Right.
And they knew it was horseshit.
Because I'm like, okay, you did 3,000 parts, then... Then I remember we did 9,000 parts, then we did 12,000 parts, mm-hmm. then we did 10,000 parts. So, you know, I'm like, why don't you question them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, show me what I did in
right. Right.
You know, but Kelly just had them wrapped around his little finger.
But the thing is, that got them mad. And
right.
what they did was they decided they were going to show
yeah,
a whole
try
show.
To, yeah, try to Kelly, slam us, man.
And Kelly was just laughing. See, that's how you mm-hmm. motivate people. But that's not how you motivate people. And Ernest, who was the other guy who was helping out, he finally had enough of it. And I saw him get in Kelly's face
You should have seen him a couple of weeks ago. He walked off the line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's second off now.
Oh, really?
So he finally finding out for himself what we're going through.
So, mm-hmm. See, now he's like, and you tried to talk to him about it. You would go over, actually, because I was still new there.
Right.
You've been there for how long? About 6 years?
No, 8 years.
Eight years.
This past week.
So, you've been there for a while.
Right.
And you've stayed on the line. When you could have transferred out, you've stayed on that line.
Right.
So so you really know what's going on there. And, you know, Kelly tried to make you like group leader, but you're like, is there any more pay?
No, man.
So,
and you know me. I used to tell him all the time. I'm like, okay, I invested 8 years here, and it's like, you know, I'm a rookie.
Right.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Okay. So you won't listen to me, but you'll listen to this other person who haven't worked over here or this supervisor from another plant and so forth and so on. And don't trust the people who's been here, you know, holding us down for this long.
Right.
And it's crazy.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks. Now, they had started talking about layoffs. Mm-hmm. Actually, from the time I started working, they had been talking about layoffs. And
me as well.
I was there for about a year. And they did me pretty bad in your terms. They did me pretty bad because I missed a few days because, you know, Kathy was sick. I missed a few days because I had some health issues. I broke my finger once when I was there. I've talked about that on the show before. But they've been talking about layoffs, and finally they said that they were going to close the plant down for good. So I want to find out, what was the reaction from the plant that you saw when they first announced that they were going to close the entire plant down? What was the reaction? Was there some shock and disbelief, or were people expecting it?
Well, I tell you, Joe, it's just like I told you. You know, me myself, I saw this coming about 3 or 4 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I never thought I would be here. You know, for 8 years, but the initial reaction was shock. I mean, especially on first shift, I heard people crying, you know, people over here getting angry. I mean, it got so bad that the very next week they were bringing counselors, thinking people going to pull a post office job. And I'm like, come on, man.
How about the assembly people? Because, you know, I used to work with a lot of those.
Come on.
Because, you know, the problem that I had with a lot of those people is that, and I've said this before, is they were more concerned about their job than their work. And all they cared about was, well, we still got our job, honey, and well, now they ain't going to have their job pretty soon.
No,
but how did they react? Did you see much of that from them?
No, I tell you what they're going to miss. They're gonna miss not having a little gossip circle.
Oh, man, that's
all they're going to miss. And they're the same way. This one guy in particular, I know you remember the ringleader.
The chubby girl.
No. She used to give you hell all the time.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, professional radio.
Oh, brother. Well, anyway.
I think I know who you were talking about.
Right, with the fake hair.
Yeah.
But her son told me that, you know, they were going to have to relocate to San Antonio because she's been there like 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people on the lines bent out of shape. But, you know, for the most part, they're not letting it affect them. They still come to work, try to put up an effort. But,
well, that's admirable. But, you know, in the long run, the company really just doesn't care about them.
Oh, no.
And Kelly still have. Now, the reason why they did me the way they did was because they knew that they were going to be having to get rid of people. Mm-hmm. And they were just looking for any excuse. And, in fact, I wound up getting unemployment simply because I was honest with them about, you know, what was going on. I didn't try to, you know, pull any stuff. And when I talked to Robbie Sparks, who was the union president, she understood that this was not a situation for somebody who was abusing. Because they used to have – I don't want to go too much into what they call the point system, but there were only a certain amount of excused absences you were allowed to have.
Right.
And that used to be much more liberal back when you first started.
Yeah.
And it got changed because people were abusing it. Even you were saying people were abusing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can understand them wanting to change it. But I told Robbie, and I said, look, I can understand why you had to change it, but there are people who are abusing the system. But I'm not like that. You know I'm not like that. I have legitimate reasons here. I've got a wife who's very sick. I've had health problems myself, you know. There's no reason for this to happen. I was scheduled to have gotten laid off, I think, at the end of January, and they let me go like a month before that. And all I was really concerned with at the time was just getting unemployment.
Right.
When I got unemployment, I was happy because I knew I'd at least have something coming. If I hadn't gotten unemployment, you know, as bad off as I am now, then things would be infinitely worse, you know. But at any rate, how did the union react? Did Robbie have anything to say? Did anybody get on her case about it? Or, I mean, Robbie was getting ready to retire anyway, from what I understand.
Right. Well, I don't know much about the union then, but I'm pretty sure they've been sweating in hot water,
mm-hmm.
because now the people in the union say, where are you now?
Yeah.
You know, you said this and you saying that, and you promised this and you promised that. Where are you now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why is this happening? You know, why didn't we get the word sooner? And most importantly, what are you going to do about it now?
Right.
But
there's nothing they can do if the
right.
The union never had that much power to begin with.
Nah, please.
And
I don't even call it a union.
Yeah, well, I joined for the sake of principle, hoping that I can get in there and make some changes. But obviously,
right.
I was rebuffed on that.
Well, at least you tried, man.
Well, you know, it's. I realized that I probably wasn't ready for anything like that. But at least if they were a serious union, they would have recognized somebody who was at least enthusiastic.
Yeah.
And would have said, listen, we understand your enthusiasm. Let us help you. Let us train you what you need to do.
Right.
And it never worked with that way with them. It seemed like the leadership was more interested in protecting themselves
mm-hmm.
than anything else.
Exactly.
So, now you said there were some people who were crying. Which is really kind of remarkable. And I'm guessing that these are people who had been, maybe not the 20-year guys, but maybe the 9 and 10-year people.
Right.
Who don't haven't had to look for a job
exactly.
in a long time. And they were very happy and very secure and probably were one of those people who were real snotty about, well, I have a job, and if you're unemployed, it's your fault.
Mm.
So I can imagine that being out on the market again is going to be a bit of a shock. Me, I've been out of work for so friggin' long and so many different times. I've had so many different jobs over the years where it's just no big deal. I mean, even though you had been working at Siemens for a while, you're still fairly confident about going out into the game,
right.
So to speak. So, was it really necessary for them to move to Mexico?
No,
you really think
man.
So?
No, because it's just like we talked about a couple of days ago, they're going to find out that the quality there is not as good as it is here.
In Mexico, yeah.
Because I mean, the training is so much lacking, not to try to sound superior, but, you know, I mean, you just can't up and move on a whim and expect things to get better. And I don't know what he's trying this.
Well, I spoke to a guy named Angelo, who was a nice enough guy, who was working on the assembly line until they discovered he had a degree in mechanical engineering. They made him a QA inspector. Very nice guy. Portuguese, I think, but he spoke English and he spoke Spanish.
Right.
And he was helping out, taking pictures of the line, showing how everything worked for training purposes. And I knew that's exactly why they were doing it to begin with. I mean, it was fairly obvious right off the bat. And I talked to him about the Mexican workers because he had been down there and he had worked in that area. And I said, won't they in time get just as good, you know, eventually? And he said, no, because there's no education down there. And the workers down there basically don't care. They'll come in, do whatever work,
yeah.
and, you know, just collect their paycheck. And, you know, what could happen is that in time, these guys who are going to be working for maybe $5 a week, which maybe it's more than that, but still not a whole lot of money.
No.
Nothing like what they were paying us over
far
at Siemens.
Less.
Over in Tucker, but they're just not going to have as good a work ethic as we do. And I don't mean to say that they're lazy, but their quality is simply not going to be as good.
Right.
And because there's not enough education down there, there's not much of an odd idea for them to improve. They're home, they're making their money.
Exactly.
And all that. So, and they're going to lose. That's the point I was trying to make. I lost my thought there. They might lose their job eventually to some guy in Vietnam or Thailand. Who's willing to do the job for half of what they're making.
Right.
But I think in the long run, Siemens and other companies that are doing this are going to realize. I'm a fan of outsourcing. We've talked about this before on the line.
Mm.
I'm a fan of outsourcing for the right reasons. Company wants, if GM wants to build a plant in Germany so that they can sell cars to Germans, more power to them, man. It's good for the Germans so that they have a place to work, you know.
Right.
Of course, they'd have to have Germany's labor standards, which are much better than ours, but if it's coming up in here, Toyota or Honda wants to come down here and build cars here in the States, it's because it's easier to build them here than to build them in Japan and ship them over. Hey, I'm all for that. It's good for the American economy. I'm not against Honda. I'm not against Siemens. I'm not against any big company. But there's right reasons and wrong reasons to do stuff. And moving across the world just to find out where you can find the cheapest labor, it just makes everything bad. Because you know what? After a while, it gets to the point where if nobody's making any money, who can afford to buy anything?
You're right.
You know?
You're right.
I feel bad for the guys out there. I mean, the ones that were crying, the ones that were upset. I feel bad for them because maybe they've just been, they haven't been working so long, or they haven't been out of work for so long that they really don't understand what the reality of the situation is for people who are currently on the outside. Now, I'm fortunate, and you're fortunate, that I have some skills that I can, I don't want to say fall back on, but I have room for improvement.
Right.
And but some of these people really, and it's nothing really against them because no one really has to be that way, but really they're only fit for these type of jobs. I mean, very low skill, hardworking, but low skill, not a lot of thinking type of jobs. And they're basically trapped in that, and those are the type of jobs that are going away. We're turning into a service economy, slowly but surely. So, I don't know.
Well, I just think, and you're right about that, but I just like to add that I just think that they just got caught up in that comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like we were sort of, you know, discussing earlier that, oh, this place is always going to be here.
Right.
And, oh, I'm always going to have a spot here at Siemens. But right. We don't realize that this is still a business.
Right.
And, you know, I've been here 8 years, and I don't think we went over 60% productivity, once?
Mm-hmm.
And how can you survive like that?
And it's all really the fault of not just guys like Kelly, but the people who put him in position, because the his bosses,
right,
they were hiring people like that, like Charles Osborne, and what was his name, the guy, the third shift guy on the line, Johnny Fowler, and he was, they all had the same kind of mentality about motivating people, just intimidating them. They didn't try to talk to anybody. They didn't try to figure out what's the most efficient way of doing stuff so they can increase productivity and still have, you know, a good workplace. They didn't care about that. And I'm wondering what they're going to do now. I mean, they're managers, so maybe they'll have a better chance. But the truth be told, Kelly in particular, he's not the brightest bulb in the world.
Right.
And I really don't know if he had to get a position in a place where something was really important that needed to get done, could he cope with that? Because they're, you know, managerial jobs, they're, for the most part, they're looking for stuff like that.
Right.
And some of the people who had been around a long time, they're just going to retire anyway. There were still people there who had been there 20, 25 years.
Right.
Kelly had been there, what, about 10, 12 years?
Well,
something like that. Maybe not long enough to retire yet.
Oh, no. He's only been at Siemens 7 years.
Okay, so he got there after you did.
Right.
So, and when, you know, well, he was ex-military, I think, was why. Charles was ex-military. Were they both ex-military?
Yeah. Charles still current.
Yeah, he's a Navy reservist.
Right.
And I'm glad he hasn't been called. I actually, to be perfectly honest, I always kind of liked Charles. He was a jerk, but I understood him. And, you know, the thing about it is he liked me because he saw that I was a no-bullshit type of person.
Well, you were one of the minority.
Yeah, I know. And there was just a lot of people there that their whole game is sucking up. And there's a lot of people there who are afraid to stand up for themselves, and they figure, you know, like you said, they're in that comfort zone, and they don't want anything to disturb that.
Right.
So they don't want to speak up or say anything. Hang on, let me get a drink here.
Right.
Professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. What do you think of Studio Al, by the way?
It's pretty good.
Not what you expected, is it?
Well, hey.
Well, you've been here before, so you knew what it looked like.
Well, hey, some of the best things come out of something small.
That's right.
There you go.
Good things come in small packages.
There you go. And to further elaborate on that point about the intimidation factor, I know Kelly for quite a while, and it's just like I told you before while you were working on the line. His whole deal is, you know, it's like a military style training type deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he'll come and look at you and intimidate you and stare at you. And if you're not doing what he expects you to do, he'll say, hey, don't miss a hook. Every hook.
He tried to do that to me a couple of times. I'm like, I'm hanging as fast as I can.
Right. And as soon as you stand up to him, you know, until then, that's when he'll cut you some slack.
Well, the thing is, the new people there, the people who they're hired as temps, they could get fired at any time.
Right.
Once you get permanent, then you have a little bit of seniority. It becomes more difficult to fire you. Mm. So long as you're not refusing to work, you know, I mean, that's a big thing. Because I would never refuse to work, but it's like, look, this is, you know, this is the pace I set for myself. And the thing about it is the assembly job where I moved over to, realistically, is the simplest job in the whole plant. I mean, I got paid, what, $13 an hour to sit there and screw in a screw all day for 8 hours. And not even that, really. And there were times when the line was down for a while. You're waiting for parts or stuff like that.
2-3 hours.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's really a pain in the ass job. If you're a creative person like myself, it's the type of job that will, in the long term, drive you crazy. But for there are some people, that's, you know, that's beautiful. That's wonderful. But it was ruined because of all the little gossipy things going on. And,
right.
You know, I had my fights with people over there, as I'm sure you saw. Yeah. I used to yell at, Dave, the forklift driver, who I was always worried about because he was always knocking shit over. With that forklift. Remember when he got the forklift caught in the paint line?
Yeah.
Let me give you an example, folks, of how much torque is on this paint line. These forklifts weigh, what, a couple of tons?
Yep.
And once when Dave was moving, he was just moving in to pick up a package that was on the other side of the line. And he didn't think about it, or we should have turned the line off. But he didn't think about that. He went in there, and the hook caught up on the roof of the forklift. And nearly tipped it over. It would have tipped it over if you hadn't come over and turned the line off.
Right.
And in fact, that line was capable of dragging that 2-ton forklift down the line. In fact, I was thinking it would have been funny if we could have hung a hammock in between a couple of the hooks and just maybe take a little ride around. You know, get off.
Could have.
Yeah, you could have, definitely. If it can pull a 2-ton forklift, it can hold a 200-pound Joe Vecchio.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just go there, and, well, you couldn't do it through the paint line because you don't want to actually go through the paint vat.
No.
I don't think you want to do, but you could have gone from where we were at, because when it finished with us, the line went back around to where they hung stuff. So we could have made that little trip around. That would have been fun. Or just put a little seat or something in between two hooks and just sat down like a little swing. And
yeah, Caleb, hey, what are you doing?
Just going on a little trip. I used to put notes.
Yeah. Just shaking my head. Lord have mercy.
But, you know, it's a type of job where my dad would work a job like that, or my uncles or the people of that generation. They could work a place like that for 20 years, and the people who started there 25, 30 years ago were like that. And you can't imagine that this day and age. You can't imagine. And you could support yourself on it. My dad just was a construction worker for New York City. And he could support his whole family on that one job. And he was only making $6.50 an hour.
Right.
And the guys, especially the guys that ran the big press, they were making like $20, $25 an hour, which is pretty good.
Those were the days.
Those were the days. We're gonna cut out from this point. Dave, I want to thank you for dropping by and talking about what was going on.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
No problem. It's good to have you. We'll have you back someday, and we'll talk
about
it. Okay,
look forward to that.
All right. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Cup of Joe radio show. For Ravishing Rick, for my wife, for my friend Dave, who was nice enough to be on the show with me, and, of course, for me, your host, Joe Vecchio, this is the Cup of Joe radio show signing off. Until next time. Bye.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Oh, in a jar of John. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with a creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You be a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do everything. Open a can of Dan. Make a meal of Sam. But don't give me no mug, 'cause what I really want, Cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe radio show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
A plate of Dave, creamer of Steve. of Doug. A cuppa.